This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed the Farm Workforce Modernization Act last week. The vote was 247 to 174, with 30 Republicans siding with 217 Democrats voting in favor of the bill. The Hagstrom Report says the act would give farm workers in the United States without legal documents a way to gain legal status. The House also passed the American Dreamers and Promise Act, which would allow young people who entered the United States as children without legal status to stay in the country. Farm workers are vital to the well-being of our country and our economy, says President Biden. For generations, farm workers across America, many of whom aren't in the country legally, have worked countless hours to feed our nation and ensure our communities are healthy and strong. He says that's even more clear because of COVID. Democrat Zoe Lofgren of California is primarily the sponsor of the Ag Workforce Bill. She says stabilizing the ag labor supply will protect farmers and our future food supply. The act accomplishes this by providing a path to legal status for farm workers and updating and streamlining the H-2A temporary worker visa program. She says it also ensures fair wages and working conditions for all workers. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture says that export sales of soybeans plunged while grain sales rose higher week over week. An agency report says soybean sales in the 7 days ending on March 11th totaled 202,400 metric ton, down 42% week over week and 31% from the prior four-week average. China bought the largest number of beans, totaling only 71,500 metric tons. Bangladesh was next at 57,100, followed by Japan. The totals would have been higher, but an unknown country canceled cargoes totaling 123,200 metric ton. Exports came in at 534,100 ton, 24% lower than the previous week, and corn sales last week were 985,900 metric ton, with Mexico the largest buyer at 285,500. Followed by Colombia and South Korea. Exports reached a marketing year high of 2.2 million metric ton. Wheat sales through March 11th were 390,100 metric ton, 18% higher than the previous week, and 40% higher than the average from this time last year. China was the main buyer of wheat of 132,300 metric ton. Mexico and Taiwan rounded out the top three wheat buyers. Unknown destinations canceled shipments of 215,800 tons, while exporters last week came in at 662,300 tons of U.S. wheat. And the USDA also says that milk production in the 24 major milk-producing states totaled 16.8 billion pounds in February, but that's down about a percentage and a half from February last year. However, production was 2.3% above last year after adjusting for the leap year. January revised production was 18.4 billion pounds, 2.5% from January of 2020. The January revision represents an increase of 150 million pounds, or 0.8% from last month's preliminary production estimate. The number of milk cows on farms across the 24 major dairy states was 8.94 million head, 88,000 more than February of last year, and 2,000 more head than January of this year. Total U.S. milk production hit 17.6 billion pounds, which was a percentage and a half lower than last year at the same time. However, production was up 2% from last year after adjusting for leap year. Production per cow in the U.S. averaged 1,864 pounds in February, 44 pounds lower than last February. California was the top state in February with more than 3.3 billion pounds of milk produced, followed by Wisconsin, which produced 2.4 billion pounds of milk. In your featured National Ag story here on this Tuesday, veterans make the choice to serve our country in good times and in bad. A large portion of those veterans come from rural parts of the country. When their enlistments are done, they face a tough decision. Many of them wonder what kind of a contribution they can make after the military. Some of those farm kids come back home and take over their family farm. One Texas Marine veteran is looking to showcase the work veterans can do in the ag sector. Many times it is beyond just going back to the farm. Some veterans have training and real-world experience to take them even further in a career. Michael DeSaw is a Marine veteran and head of AGD Consulting. He also has a background in ag engineering. His extensive time and travels in the military gave him the inspiration to start his consulting company. He talks about the epiphany that he had on just how he could help veterans transition into agriculture and careers into the industry. He started the podcast Vets in Ag to highlight the many options which are out there for veterans returning to the workforce.
And it got me thinking that there's a lot more to agriculture than just production farmland. And coming from a veteran background, what we started to notice was that the attention that was being paid to the veteran community as they transitioned out into agriculture was focused on largely production ag. And that's not at all to say that there's not benefits to it, because there absolutely are, both mental health, but also physical benefits. Myself included, having experienced that and living on a farm in Northeast Texas. But what we wanted to do with the recent podcast that we started, which is called Vets in Ag, is to shed more of a broad light onto the other parts of the agricultural space that the veteran is, I think, uniquely positioned to cover down on: technology, entrepreneurship, and business. Because of their experiences and because of the two overlaps in the communities, agriculture and the military, which there are many of, I think they really bring a set of soft skills, both soft and hard skills, that can solve some unique problems.
Dessau has been joined by veterans of the Army, Marines, Navy, and Air Force, and many more people to talk about how veterans can be involved. He also wants it to be a place for ag companies to learn about how veterans can help their business grow.
But really, the goal is to try to get as many different perspectives from folks who have transitioned out, that are actively leading in these areas of technology, entrepreneurship, and business, to try to showcase to the veteran that there's people who have done this transition successfully and can be, you know, trailblazers or native guys, so to speak, for you as you look to kind of move into the sector. The other thing we're hoping to do is that if there are agribusinesses listening, and we've had a gentleman from Cargill on who has a very military background as well, is that often the veteran struggles with telling their story. They struggle with kind of articulating the skills that they have that can be used in a business environment. And that agribusinesses tend not to know, or tend to also struggle with, the questions to ask and how to draw those experiences out of the veteran. And so we're hoping to do that through the common medium of stories, both ones that the veteran shares, but then we also hope that there's representatives from agribusinesses that are listening that can say, oh, I didn't realize that the veteran had these sort of skill sets. And the way we're trying to get the veteran to do that is just by telling their story.
Dessau says in his own experiences, he wanted to reinvest his farming operation through tangible investments. He also wanted to show his boys the benefits of having a life of service. Dessau says that farmers are providing an equally important service to the country, and that veterans can use agriculture as an opportunity to serve yet again.
It was time for me in particular to reinvest, so to speak, to put money back in the family bank and recoup some of that time that had been lost, and to show really our four young boys not only that there was more to life and the world than what was directly in front of them, because three of them at the time came with us on that trip, and really to raise them in an environment where they understood where their food came from. They understood the value of service, their father being a veteran, but then the agricultural community is just as much of a service to the country as the military veteran is. I think two out of three of the American farmers are struggling with succession issues, and we as the veteran community take that as an opportunity to serve again, right? That America needs another group of young men and women to come in and take up the mantle, so to speak, in a lot of ways.
Dessau says that his goal is to help veterans find a sense of purpose when they wrap up their military career. He says that the traditional private sector sometimes poses more challenges than it helps. Dessau says agriculture provides that sense of purpose once again. Moving along now into State of Illinois Ag News, US EPA has issued rules allowing dicamba to be used on soybeans again this coming season. The state of Illinois has some additional application restrictions. These extra restrictions for dicamba used on soybeans in the state this year are nearly identical to those from last season. Some of those restrictions will be a temperature restriction on the product label. The restrictions will indicate these dicamba-containing products cannot be applied to soybeans if the actual air temperature at the field at the time of application is over 85 degrees, or if the National Weather Service forecasts the temperature for the nearest available location on the day of application exceeds 85 degrees. And other significant changes and differences between the state and federal label is that the Illinois label will again restrict application of these dicamba-containing products on soybeans to June 20th. The federal application restriction is to June 30th, but again, the Illinois rules do not allow for dicamba application on soybeans after June 20th. Also, you'll need to be aware of adjacent properties before spraying. Applications cannot be made if the wind is blowing toward a residential area or a natural preserve, and farmers will also need to be consulting the Endangered Species website. The URL is on product labels. Counties with endangered species have different downwind buffers, and those counties have changed from last year. New this year is that the only field and crop allowed to be downwind in those counties is another dicamba soybean crop. U.S. EPA's dicamba herbicide on soybean application restrictions was issued as a 5-year federal label, and the states have the authority to impose tighter restrictions through federal processes. And in local ag news here on this Tuesday, don't forget that the Macoupin County Ag Ed Foundation scholarships are still available. You can pick one up from a high school guidance counselor or ag teacher in Macoupin County or from the Macoupin County Farm Bureau directly, and they are due by this Friday. And coming up this Saturday, the 27th, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be holding a household hazardous waste collection at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Butler from 8 until 3. Acceptable wastes include oil-based paint and paint thinner, aerosol paint and cleaning products, insecticides, herbicides, and pesticides, mercury, old gasoline, antifreeze, and used motor oils, fluorescent light bulbs, old and expired medicines, and household batteries. For a full listing of what they will and will not be accepting, you can find that on our website at WSMIRadio.com or the Farm Bureau's website, mcfb.org, or you can call the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro and talk to Katie. That's 532-6171. And that wraps up Ag News here on a Tuesday morning, but remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Tuesday morning, March 23rd, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News.